Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Legacy Finance Committee. Today is Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. We have a very exciting presentation today, and we're going to get right into it. So welcome to the committee, and just remember to introduce yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair and members, Angie Becker-Kadelka, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Dan Stewart, Brainerd Bowser Office, and Landscape Forest Planning.
Madam Chair and members, thank you so much for this invitation today to share some stories around how investing in protection in the upper Mississippi River Basin has made results with legacy funding. So today we have folks here that live and work in that region. And so in addition to Mr. Stewart, in the audience we have other representatives from Bowser, including Jeff Rubish and Chris Pence. There are folks from the Crow Wing Soil and Water Conservation District. Melissa Barrick has come down. And we also have, I've noticed, other folks that are working in the region. So, for example, the Nature Conservancy, who has a Mississippi Headwaters project, to all be here and talk about what are some of the things that have happened in this region. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dan Stewart to talk a little bit about protection projects.
Thank you, Angie. The first slide I'd like to start with is this one, a favorite of mine. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, as they say, where that's a very familiar saying. I think that's a 16-to-1 ratio, if my math is right. And so Jimmy Doolittle was an American hero in World War II, aviator. He was also a bit of an inventor. This is a brilliant fellow, and when he couldn't quite win the barnstorming races that were going on cross-country in the early days of aviation, he invented high-octane aviation fuel, and then he won the races. So that's a pretty creative fellow, and I think this is a great comment. I don't know that it's limited to just Americans, though. I think it's human nature to fix things that are broken. I mean, it's just natural. But often it's very expensive to react after the fact when things are run down and in tough shape, very, very expensive. And so not that that is to say that we can always see when problems are coming. Sometimes we can't, and we're caught totally flat-footed. But thankfully, in the case of Minnesota lakes, and we're going to talk mainly about the upper Mississippi River Basin lakes today, we have some really good research that's been completed recently by DNR Fisheries that gives us some great warning signs on when things conditions in our lakes might be on the warning side of things. Northern Minnesota's economy for a long time has been characterized as the three T's: taconite, mainly in the northeastern part of the state, tourism, and that lake-based tourism, basically, and then the third T would be the timber industry. And so those three T's, mainly most of that northern part of the state without the taconite, it's really two T's. It's timber and tourism. And what's really exciting to us is these two elements can be brought together in mutually supporting roles as protections in protecting investments in protecting private forest lands can reap great benefits for the water quality, not only in our lakes, but the lakes all eventually lead to the Mississippi River, and the Mississippi River in turn to serve the water supply for St. Cloud, St. Paul, and much of Minneapolis. So there's a unique Minnesota, northern Minnesota to metro connection in this case that we think is really exciting, and it really all starts with our forest lands. This slide came from Pete Jacobson, a research scientist with DNR Fisheries, Protect the Sponge. And really the main point here is, if you see in the right in the center of the slide, this 35% surface water detained or infiltrated. It's a very key element in this whole presentation, that big blue arrow in the middle going down into the ground. And really when we have a forest condition, precipitation starts getting intercepted in forest conditions, commonly 50 or 60 feet off the ground, be it snow or rain. It's being intercepted from its fall. It's starting to slowly work its way through the leaves or the needles or down the branches and so on to the ground. And then once it reaches to the ground, especially if these forests happen to be on sandy soils, most of north central Minnesota, they're very coarse sandy soils that have a tremendous ability to infiltrate water. In addition to the forest cover, you've got sand underneath. Very helpful. And so we like to say forest cover is great at putting water in the ground. Okay? When the water goes into the ground, it's not running across the surface nearly as much. When it runs across the surface, that water has the opportunity to pick up nutrients, especially phosphorus and sediment. And then, of course, eventually it gets deposited into a lake, and lakes start to experience algae blooms and enrichment from that phosphorus that's attached to the sediment that's picked up through surface flows. So to the extent we can keep our lakes, and the extent that we have high-quality northern lakes, is to a great part due to that groundwater infiltration piece. And so that's why the sponge is so important, not only to lake quality up in our northern Minnesota lakes, but also all the way down here in the Twin Cities. As the some of that water that gets infiltrated into the ground goes into deep groundwater recharge, but a lot of that water is moving very just in shallow surface flow just beneath the surface until it reaches a topographic low like this little swale here that happens to be in St. Louis County. And then those waters come out of the hillsides at the bottom in a little seep and so on and start this little creek. Small creeks in northern Minnesota don't go too far until they empty into a lake. And then the lake has an outlet on the other side, and the creeks, small creeks connect with other creeks to make small rivers, and then a couple small rivers meet to form a fairly significant river. And then the rivers all drain into the Mississippi River and carry that flow down here. So that's that whole piece is what we're talking about. When we say protection, it's really important to, I think, define the term. And when we say protection, we're talking, I thought of four things, four positives and one negative. A positive is the absence of impairments. When we say water quality protection, it's the absence of impairments. So that's a very important thing. These lakes, there are a few impairments in northern Minnesota, but very few. And those lakes tend to be shallow, and they're often impoundments. So a couple things there. But protection is also not just about water quality, it's also about habitat. Okay, that's an important piece. It's not by protecting and focusing on private forests, we're protecting not only water quality, but also habitat. So it's kind of a two-for-one, which is a beginning of a stacking, maybe, of public benefits. But in terms of, also in regard to habitat, it's not just about lake-based habitat. It's about stream-based habitat. And it's also not just about fisheries habitat. It's about terrestrial habitat, too. So, for instance, the little creeks that come into our lakes, not only do the pike and the suckers like to spawn in those creeks in the spring, so that's aquatic fisheries connection, but also wildlife, the otter, the mink and muskrats and fur bears and things like that like to run those same streams as well. So it's also terrestrial habitat. So those are the four positives. The thing it's not the absence of management. So when we say protection, a protected forest, we don't mean a forest that isn't still open and where timber management, in fact, is encouraged. It's at the will of the local landowner, but, you know, for instance, if land is goes into a conservation easement, that most of those easements do not discourage, in fact, they encourage private forest management, and usually that means to most landowners eventually a timber sale. And so these are working lands, and they're not lands that are protected to the extent that they're out of that working lands condition. And they're still on the tax rolls. Wouldn't it be great if we could get a photograph of how much groundwater influence there actually is in our lakes? Well, this is the little township road that I drive to work each day, and I have for 35 years. And so that's 10,000 days. And this photo was there one day in 10,000 days where it got cold, early November. The lake was just starting to freeze. There's a little bit of skim ice there. Absolutely still conditions at night. Happens to be a shallow lake, only 8 feet deep. And this photo shows, documents visually, how much groundwater activity there is in this lake. And so these groundwater activity areas are usually near shore, very near the shore, as you can see in this case. And if you turn and look the other way down the shoreline, it's just hundreds of springs feeding this lake. Well, this has a forested watershed, and so this is the other end of the forest. Start the process by putting the water in the ground cleanly, and then it comes out in the bottom of our lakes and streams as cold and in sandy soil, sometimes fairly well oxygenated groundwater. I referred to some research work that DNR Fisheries did about 10 years ago. They'd worked on this for a long, long time, and two of the main authors were Mike Duvall, at the time Fisheries, and Peter Jacobson. And what they wanted to see was they looked at 2,200 fish management lakes in Minnesota, and they wanted to know how much can you open the watershed? That means deforest, so take the canopy off the watershed before you start to see phosphorus spike. And so the point in looking at 2,200 lakes was 25%. When you disturb or deforest about a quarter of the watershed, you're starting to change that dynamic from groundwater to surface water and picking up more nutrients. And so you can see there at that red 25% line, phosphorus is starting to spike dramatically. And the lakes can't take that, and now we are headed towards the impaired waters list and impairments. So this has been an extremely useful bit of work they did. The left axis there is total phosphorus. And again, that's that nutrient that limits plant growth in our lakes, and we don't want too much of. And then the other axis horizontally is just how much of the watershed has been disturbed. This graph shows the same things in a different way. Each of the dots on the triangle at the left is a Minnesota lake. Those are the 2,200 lakes they studied. And so the light green there, the dark green at the top of the triangle, those are lakes like typical of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, where there's high levels of protection, the vertical axis, a lot of federal land, a lot of state land, some county land, and so on. So those, as we define protection again, we mean county land, state land, federal land, private easements, and private wetlands. So that's what constitutes that and rounds out the definition of protected when we use that term. And so those lakes in the dark green are in what we call vigilance mode. They should have good water quality well into the future because they're very low levels of disturbance on the bottom, and then on the vertical axis, high levels of protection. Okay, you might say from the lake's perspective, that's the ideal state. On the opposite end, the red part of the graph, those are lakes that typically in the prairie part of the state that where only partial restoration would be achievable because they tend to be heavily degraded, and that partial restoration would be very expensive. And so then in the yellow part, you've got lakes where full restoration is still likely possible, but it's still going to be pretty expensive. And then the sweet spot of this graph is the light green, and you can see how well that aligns with north central Minnesota on the map on the right. So we call the light green the sweet spot, and that's where the least amount of dollars or investment would make the most difference for the most acres of protecting high quality lakes that are featured basically on our license plates and that the whole state is I think quite proud of. And so that sweet spot of north central Minnesota also represents the area drained by the Mississippi River. And so this is the same area from which the Twin Cities and St. Cloud's drinking water supply comes from. Fisheries work did was it culminated in this watershed protection goal of 75%. If 75% of the lake's watershed can be protected, that doesn't necessarily mean public, but if it can be protected forest lands, you're likely to have good water quality sustained well into the future. This slide shows the forest land ownership in Minnesota. The small 6% slice at the top is industry land in Minnesota, such as Blind and Paper Company, perhaps. The 17% is county lands. You also can see the red and the green are similar size slices. But the largest slice by quite a bit is the private forest lands of the state in that yellow part at 41%. And we like to, you know, stay focused on the risk and the risk to these forest lands, and then subsequently, eventually, the waters downstream comes not from the public lands, but from the private lands. It's the private lands where you can have more outcomes such as subdivisions and hardening, armoring of the surface that increases runoff and leads to problems. That's much more likely to come from the private lands, yellow slice of the pie, than the public lands on the left side. And so the public lands are well managed. They have certification processes conducted by third-party sources that audit them regularly on their timber management practices. And so we assume, although there's exceptions to everything, that generally these lands are well managed. And so therefore the risk is more much stronger on the private land side of the equation. So we call this follow the water quality risk to private lands. Prioritizing, targeting, and measuring is the approach that Bowser, Board of Water and Soil, uses in allocating public funds from the Clean Water Fund and the referendum to units of government that apply for those funds. Prioritize, target, and measure. We define prioritization, we like to say prioritize your project, first of all, by water resource. In other words, the lakes, the state has 14,000 lakes. Why did you pick this lake? What in particular is there about this lake that makes it worthy of being a priority? And we use things like unimpaired lakes data, water quality trends, phosphorus sensitivity, biological significance, cold water fisheries. These are all state data sets that are available and a fair way of starting to drill down into lake priorities. And then we target by land. Now we look at the land once we've selected a priority lake, and we look at, we think riparianness is important. In other words, being, if land is on the water, be it a lake or a stream, that's important and desirable because lands on the water have more effect than lands further from the water. We also think we should build resilience into our public lands if we can while we're at it. So adjacency to public lands is important. Rather than just having an 80 out there by itself, why not have that 80 next to a quarter section of state land and a quarter section of county land? You have a larger block of permanent habitat into the future for no increased cost. And then we have a quality factor. We have the locals define quality. North Central Minnesota has a lot of Cisco lakes. Fisheries says they're the best of the best indicators. Cisco, these little members of the salmon family, that our best walleye, pike, and muskie population in lakes are Cisco lakes because this high oil content fish is just a tremendous energy source for those bigger fish further up the food chain, and so those fisheries tend to be strongest in Cisco lakes. Minnesota has, I think my memory serves me right, northwards of 200 of these lakes, which is just an exceptional natural resource, and they tend to be deep and cold. So that might be defined as quality, or it might be wild rice. Other parts of the state may not have Cisco lakes, but maybe they've got sturgeon. Okay, so that could be defined as a quality fishery. And so it's whatever, it gives the locals, local government, counties and soil and water conservation districts up in our area, an opportunity to turn the knobs and the dials on prioritization to fit local needs. And we call this RAC, or rack them up for short, and that is R is riparian, A is adjacency, and Q is quality. I should back up and say that, you know, when the Clean Water Act passed in 1971, I think it wasn't written for the clean waters of the country. It was written because the Detroit River was on fire, and Lake Erie was in terrible shape, and things like, there were a lot of impaired waters in the country. That's why the Clean Water Act passed. It wasn't written for protection lakes where things are still good. So what we're trying to do here really is develop methodologies that help local governments, counties in northern Minnesota, protect and manage these incredible water resources that are in many ways the best in the lower 48 states. And so these methodologies we're moving into here are not required. They're merely suggested, and we meet with local governments all the time on these things through their One Water, One Plan processes, and they adopt and take what they like and ignore the rest. Okay, now moving into, okay, if we were going to protect forests and identify priority lakes and priority parcels, how would we do that? What might that look like? So we developed this theoretical scenario. This is Borden Lake, a real lake, which is up in southeastern Crow Wing County on the northwest corner of Mille Lacs Lake. Garrison, that little town there, that's where this is. It's not, of course, just Borden Lake. You'll notice there's about 8 or 10 lakes in this minor watershed here, so they all benefit. Borden is 1,000 acres. It's 84 feet deep. It's a Tier 1 Cisco Refuge Lake, which is indicative of the best Cisco lakes in the state. It has, I think, 9 islands. It's just an outstanding lake and typical of many lakes in northern Minnesota. And so looking at this, its protection status, it starts at 53% protected, as you can see in the graph in the upper right corner. And again, that's a combination of county and state land. I think there's one easement shown in red there currently in this watershed. And then there also there's some SFIA land, Sustainable Forest Incentives Act, a legislative tool created about 10 years ago that works through DNR forestry. And so those protected forest factors add up to 53% currently. Well, let's just say there was easement money available, and some of the folks in the watershed were willing to consider a conservation easement. Okay? Again, the land stays on the tax rolls. It's not public. Timber management is encouraged. Well, it might look like this. And we move the risk factor to 61, which means reduced risk from 53. Okay? Because remember, we don't want to go past 75% if we can help it. Real important point here is, in this scenario, we're staying off the blacktop, which is Crow Wing County Roads 8 and 10, because in Crow Wing County's Comprehensive Land Use Plan, they say we want to develop along the existing infrastructure, the existing roads, so we aren't building miles and 2 mile stubs off that road and then have to maintain those indefinitely into the future. So we are working here in concert and coordination with the county comp plan and recognizing that the validity of that point. And so then let's say some of the landowners, though, were more interested in the Sustainable Forest Incentives Act, or SFIA. That's an 8-year covenant. It's not permanent protection, but they do agree not to develop their land for at least 8 years. And so let's say that brought it up to 73, and not that fee title is required or purchase of the land, but let's say some was supported there by the local board. And then you could say with 2% at the end there for fee title, the blue parcels, the goal would be met. We'd be at 75%. So this is just a quick scenario that demonstrates how existing state programs like SFIA and conservation easements, the RIM program, Forest for the Future easements, can collect together with forest stewardship planning. Some landowners, all they want is a forest stewardship plan. That's okay. Collectively can move a gem of a lake like Borden into a much more secure future in terms of its water quality. The shoreline tax base on Borden Lake is $33 million. That's a lot of tax base for a little corner of a rural county, and that's because there's a very high quality, very desirable lake there, and people want to be part of that. So there's $33 million tax base on Borden currently. If you built out the lands above 75%, okay, you've got your 75% protected forest, theoretically, let's say. There's 25% left. If you build that out, that $33 million in this case would go to north of 200% of that. So there's tremendous room yet within the 25% to still grow the tax base. So we wondered if this isn't lake protection with room to grow. because certainly local units of government are going to need to continue to grow their tax base. Okay, now we're going to shift and wind this up with three examples that are not theoretical but are examples, real-life, on-the-ground implementation examples where pieces of this scenario have been successfully implemented thanks to funds either from the Lessard Habitat monies or the Clean Water Fund. This is the Kaiser Family Wild Rice Easement in Cass County, over up by, it's on the Pine River just east of Bacchus. This fellow and his family were very interested in protecting the Pine River, and they wanted it to stay long-term the way it was. You can't see the wild rice in here in this particular photo because it must be early June. The rice isn't up yet, but I can guarantee you that you can barely paddle a canoe through this river come early September. The rice is so thick. So this is just a wonderful, high-quality habitat that connects three lakes in its immediate vicinity. This 50-acre conservation easement cost $65,000 to permanently protect that bend in the Pine River. If you look in the center of the map here with the circle around it, that's the Kaiser Family easement. So now you can see its context on the Pine River. That green land immediately adjacent to the Kaisers is Cass County tax forfeited land. So this was a potential future development down the road. And in this case now, which Cass County would not be very excited about extending a road into that area, now that opportunity to grow a subdivision has been removed. You can see other protected lands on the Pine. Brockway Lake in the center is an outstanding wild rice lake. Lake Hattie to the east is a fishing lake and a wild rice lake, as is Lind Lake to the west. And so these are the three lakes. A lot of Cass County land. The light green land is state land. So there's a half or three quarters of the mile of the river protected there by that state land piece. The crosshatched red pieces are conservation easements that when this slide was being developed were in process. They've since been completed. And the pink one to the lower right on the river was completed by the Leech Lake Watershed Project. So you can see here collectively a really significant high-quality habitat area has been protected well into the future. You can see the area circled in red. We always were hoping to get an easement on that very critical stretch there. Tremendous use by diving ducks in the spring and the fall when they do their migration because of all the rice in that bay. And those landowners have been in touch now, and it looks like that property is going to be protected by an easement. We're very excited about that. Another example, only two left. This is the Little Nokasippi Minor Watershed, an aerial shot of that. Crowing, and this is right on the county line between Crowing and Morrison counties. Just south of Brainerd, and that's the Little Nokasippi River you see there in the background, CB Lake. Highway 371 was just off to the right of this photo. Here you see where Crow Wing County, in their, they were a driving force in developing this risk methodology. Their county water plan in this minor watershed that you see in gray on the inset map to the left had a risk factor. It was only 13% protected. So this watershed, very high risk factor. Okay, the U.S. Forest Service ranks the Nokasippi River number 7 of the 81 watersheds in Minnesota for providing high-quality drinking water to the Twin Cities. It's number 7. Very high risk. Not necessarily a good thing. And so thanks to the ACUB project, Army Compatible Use Buffer, we've partnered with the National Guard, who owns 53,000 acres of Camp Ripley, the training facility there. And the Guard nationally is very interested in controlling residential development adjacent to military training facilities. They're very hard to relocate, and when the big guns go off at 3 o'clock in the morning, they don't want a lot of calls. And so in lots of places, the training regimen gets gets tamped down and shortened because there's too much residential development adjacent to the camp. And so they're trying to get ahead of the issue, and together the state with Lessard funds have partnered with the National Guard and Department of Defense funds, and so we've been able to put a lot of conservation easements in this watershed over the last 5 or 10 years. And now you can see if conservation easements are at 24%, where they were at 13, along with some private wetlands and some other things. Now they're at 37%, so their risk factor has been significantly reduced here. And so the local water plan, I don't know exactly what their goal is for this particular minor watershed. Maybe it's 45%. Something like that would seem quite reasonable. And so it's just a exciting example of where landowners have been very interested in signing up for conservation easements and supporting the training regimen of the camp and also retaining the rural character of the area. The last example we'll talk about is this is the Mississippi River example. The Mississippi Headwaters Board has succeeded in receiving 3 separate funding allocations from the Lessard Council. Each one of those has been about $3 million. So now this is running on $9 million. The first phase of that funding, the $3 million, has been spent now and has been implemented. And so if we look at this minor watershed here that's circled, this is right next to the bike mountain bike area at Crosby, Minnesota. And you can see in that minor watershed is orange because it has low levels of protection. So if we look closer in at this minor watershed here, you can see they started at 37%. This was a couple years ago. They were at 37. And that's for this county and state land you see crosshatched on the map. And then they did do a fee title acquisition. This particular landowner with the point on the Mississippi River there in pink didn't want an easement. They wanted to sell. And so it was brought to the county board in Crow Wing County first, and they thought it would fit well within adjacent public lands, and so they approved that sale. Okay, that reduced risk to the 46% number. And then up the top of this slide, you can see conservation easement on the north end of this section of the river, and that reduced risk to the 51% level. And then there are some lands in the watershed that are in SFIA, Sustainable Forest Incentives Act, those covenants. And so that further reduced risk, and now they're at 65% protection in a minor watershed that a couple years ago was at 37%. So pretty dramatic example, I think, of Lessard funds going into immediately adjacent to the Mississippi River, protecting both habitat, local water quality, local fisheries, and also metro water quality and drinking water. And then a very important element maybe to close on is landowners choose. The state isn't making, or the county aren't making the big decisions here. Landowners are. How much conservation do I want for my forest land? Maybe I don't want any. That's okay. Maybe I want a forest stewardship plan, and we'll talk to you maybe in a few years and see how that goes. Or maybe some folks jump right to the conservation easement. It's their choice. And so all of these things are implemented. Our key local providers and partners are soil and water conservation districts. Their role in all this is extremely important. They're the implementers, along with the county. The county a little more so on the One Water, One Plan side. They kind of direct and head that up. And together, they've been very successful, I think, in starting to run with these methodologies that are for protection country as compared to impairments. So that miner now has gone from orange to green. Reduced risk. It's a good thing. So in closing, this just summarizes the various major public benefits that come from reinvesting in our forests and our private forests. You can see from the forest industry jobs are easy to forget about, but those jobs at the mill are good paying jobs, very important. The more the timber resource gets fragmented into small pieces, the more difficult it is to keep the timber industry in Minnesota. Okay? And so there's certainly a benefit there. There's habitat benefits. There's fish habitat benefits. Of course, our local tourism economy, Twin Cities drinking water supply. The three water utilities, St. Cloud, St. Paul, and Minneapolis, withdraw 21 billion gallons of water a year out of the Mississippi River. And then the perhaps the one that's the easiest to miss of all is that blue slice up at about 10 o'clock, and that's that these lakes are much of the tax base that's running local governments in northern Minnesota. We looked at 53 particular lakes, and the combined tax base on those 53 lakes was $5.1 billion. So these are running the school districts to a great extent, the city, the county, the townships. They're extremely important. So in protecting these forests and the waters, you're also protecting the local tax base. So with that, quality forest plus quality water equals quality of life, maybe Minnesota style.
Thank you. Member, are there questions? You know, when I saw this presentation up in Brainerd, I was really impressed by all the different partners that it takes, but I'm also impressed at the impact that it makes for greater Minnesota, like you said, for the tax bases, for the tourism industry, and then also for the clean water in our cities down here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. St. Cloud is the first city to draw water on the Mississippi River for their drinking water, but they're certainly not the last. And so if we really work hard to protect the upper Mississippi, and I love the definition of protection because it's not just letting the land lay there and do nothing with it. It's good forest management. It's the timber industry. It's all of those things that make for good water quality. So I really appreciate you coming here today and bringing this forward. Yes, Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I don't expect an answer today, but I would like to ask the question and actually have you think about it. Mm-hmm. But the biggest frustration I hear from my constituents is there's so many state agencies involved in water that it's hard not to miss one when they're planning a project or when they're trying to find an answer to something. Is there a way, and is there an agency that we can pinpoint as the lead agency to ask the question and have that agency coordinate with all the other agencies to make sure that no one's missed? And that seems to be the biggest frustration. So if you could put some thought into that, I'd like to have a discussion about that later.
Any comments?
Thank you. No?
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you for coming today. I think that's the end of our presentation, and I really appreciate the folks from Greater Minnesota making the trip down today and for the committee to listen to this great program. I also want to remind you on Monday that we have a field trip, and maybe you'd like to... Okay, the details will be coming out. We will be taking, probably doing some carpooling. As you recall, last week we heard the presentation on waste management and energy fuel, trees to energy and fuel. And so we'll be, they made an offer for us to go visit that plant, and we'll be doing that on Monday during our committee time. So with that, thank you very much, and we are adjourned.